On this first morning of a new decade, we'd like to remember some of the musicians we lost in the last decade. Just think of some of the names: Tito Puente, Chet Atkins, George Harrison, Nina Simone, Artie Shaw, Michael Jackson, Johnny Cash, Ray Charles. We could go on with names, but it's so much better to hear some of the music they left behind.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever.
My skin is black. My arms are long. My back is strong.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Boogie Chillo.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack.
They told him, don't you ever come around here. Don't wanna see your face, you better disappear. The fire's in their eyes and their words are really clear. So beat it, just beat it.
Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter.
Little darling,
it's a morning of transition, a morning of change. And you can find a more complete timeline of the musical losses of the past decade by going to nprmusic.org.
I opened a CD that arrived at our office a couple of weeks ago, and when I put it on to listen, I didn't recognize this song at all. See if you can get it.
You with the sad eyes, don't be discouraged. Oh, I realize it's hard to take courage.
So I didn't realize this was a big hit from my high school days until I heard the refrain.
But I see your true colors shining through. I see your true colors, and that's why I love you. So don't be afraid to let them show. Your true colors are beautiful like a rainbow.
That, of course, is Cyndi Lauper's classic 80s hit, True Colors. But this time, it's rendered anew by a singer from Mississippi named Caroline Herring. She spends about half her new CD taking ownership of familiar tunes like that. The other half she's filled with songs she's written herself, some personal, some gothic tales of the modern South. Caroline Herring's new album is called Golden Apples of the Sun, and she joins me now to talk about it from the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, let me start with that song, True Colors, because when we listened to it here, we realized we had never really heard the words before. And was it the same for you? Had you really listened to the words before you sat down in that recording session?
No, not really. I mean, I suppose I had about 400 times, you know, listening to it on the radio, but never in that way.
Tell us a bit about how you arrived at this version.
Well, I know it might seem a bit arrogant to take on songs like that and change the melodies. It was a fun creative process for me, and I thought, now I could never sing it like Cyndi Lauper did. I'm a folk singer. I don't have that range. I don't have that style. I think Cyndi Lauper's amazing and a real American original. And so I thought she wouldn't mind. In fact, I thought she'd like it if I changed things around. So that's the direction that I took it and took other covers that I put on that record.
Well, let me take you back to your roots a little bit. I learned that you sang in your church choir in Mississippi growing up.
Yeah.
And you grew up steeped in Southern literature. I'm told your mother was a librarian, and she used to prod you to read some of the Southern writers she loved. Who's your favorite?
Right now, I'm enamored of Eudora Welty because of her wonderfully funny stories, but I'm beginning to see just under the surface of all of that. She tackles huge issues, and issues I'm very familiar with, from being a woman in Mississippi or growing up in Mississippi to certainly issues of race and class. And I have begun work on an album about Eudora Welty, short stories and photographs. I am still steeped in the South. I'm here in Atlanta, this bold new Southern city, and it's a great part of me, all the horrors and all the beauty and all the great art that's been produced here.
Caroline Herring, I want to ask about another song on this CD, inspired by art of a very different kind, and that is the work of a Mississippi artist named Walter Anderson.
We found a paradise and its own garden gate. Adam and I had on a rowboat, phosphorescence in the wave. The squall has passed and we're tied to the decay. But one day may the hurricanes come and carry us away. Carry us away.
This song is called Tales of the Islander?
That's right. Walter Anderson was a Mississippi Gulf Coast artist, and I grew up knowing about Walter Anderson and obtained my first Walter Anderson piece of art at age 16, so I've always loved him, and all Mississippians do. He worked in his family's pottery business by day and painted at night, but when Walter Anderson died, his wife went into the cottage that he had always kept to himself, and in there she found thousands of pieces of artwork, as well as murals on the four walls of the cottage representing sunrise, day, sunset, and night. They were his cottage murals, and I based my song, Tales of the Islander, on those four walls.
And the family had never known about them before.
That's correct. Nobody had seen them until after he died.
And we should note there's a bit of a sad coda to Walter Anderson's story. I know much of his work was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina.
That's true. A lot of it was, but a lot remains, and there's plenty to be seen.
Give me a sunset, a lilac, golden, green, gray skies. I'll give you spirals and zigzag lines. It's a magic hour of a halcyon day.
New record is beautiful, but we would also be remiss if we let you go without at least asking you to sing live for us. And I know you brought your guitar. We wondered if you would sing for us a song from the new CD called Abuelita, about your grandmother. Tell us about her.
My grandmother, Eleanor, grew up in Texas and in Costa Rica, and she spoke fluent Spanish, of course. And after college, she decided she wanted to go to med school, and she was accepted to Tulane University, which was a big deal for anybody. But in the late 20s, that was certainly a big deal for a woman. And she ended up doing some residency work in Mississippi, where she met my grandfather. Unfortunately, for different reasons, my grandmother never did become a doctor, and they found him a job in Mississippi, where they both lived out the rest of their lives and raised five girls. And my mom actually didn't even know that my grandmother spoke Spanish until long after my grandmother had died.
Wow, she never spoke it at home at all.
Never spoke it at home. And so I explored all of that in this song.
All right, well, we'd love to hear it. Let me let you get your guitar ready.
Okay. Okay, this is Abuelita.
I should have known why I love driving through the cactus fields or wearing white leather gloves, admiring the Virgin as she stands upon the moon, waltzing behind a second line or harmonizing the gospel tunes. Abuelita, underneath the trees of Costa Rica and her dark short seas, they won't tell me about you, they don't want me to see. Abuelita, you're just like me.
That's the song Abuelita from Caroline Herring's new album, Golden Apples of the Sun. It's just beautiful. Caroline Herring, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Looking for more music by Caroline Herring? Head to our website, npr.org/music. And while you're there, you can also sign up to get NPR's Song of the Day newsletter.
I had a few more questions I never knew to ask. You were feeling downhearted the last time we parted, with the shock of the white hair. Life has changed a lot, you know, and I'm kind of scared of that. It bottoms out in seconds flat.
Our program is directed today by Kate Davidson and produced by Phil Harrell. Our production staff includes Alice Winkler, Kenya Young, Petra Mayer, Travis Larchuk, and Theo Balcom. The technical director is Sean Phillips, assisted by Nathan Bark, John Widoff, Cal Southworth, and Mark Greenhouse. Melissa Goh is our web producer. Our reference librarian is Kima Leski. Rick Holter is the senior editor, and the senior producer is Matt Martinez. For Saturday, that's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Have a great night.
He's fighting off a main disease that's killing off his faculties.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. And today we conclude our look back at the decade that's coming to a close and the dramatic changes we've heard in the music industry with a story about compression, the kind of audio or dynamic compression that's used in a lot of popular music. There's a YouTube video that uses Paul McCartney's 1989 song Figure of Eight as an example. Let's listen. Notice how the drums stand out on the CD as it was released. Now let's listen to how the song might have sounded if it were recorded more recently, using compressors that squash the music to make it uniformly loud so it jumps out of your radio or your iPod.
It really no longer sounds like a snare drum with a very sharp attack. It sounds more like somebody patting on a piece of leather or something like that.
That's Bob Ludwig, a longtime record mastering engineer who directed us to the YouTube video called The Loudness War. Like so many conflicts, Bob Ludwig says it has escalated in recent years.
The thing that kind of brought everything to a head was this latest Metallica release, the Death Magnetic record. It was put out on Guitar Hero. It came out to the fans simultaneously, both as the Guitar Hero and the final CD. And the Guitar Hero doesn't have all the digital domain compression that the CD had. So the fans were able to hear what it could have been before this compression. Apparently 10,000 or more fans signed a petition online to get them to remix the record. That record is so loud, there's an outfit in Europe called ITU that now has standardization measurements for long-term loudness. And that Metallica record is one of the loudest records ever produced. You know, people talk about downloads hurting record sales. I and some other people would submit that another thing that's hurting record sales these days is the fact that they are so compressed that the ear just gets tired of it.
I'm thinking back to a long time ago when I remember working at a top 40 radio station, and somebody put on a 45 and showed me, look at the VU meter right now, and and here's a piece of music. Maybe it was some Phil Spector production. Barely moving during it.
Yes, indeed. I mean, certainly the loudness wars have gone back to the days of 45s. When I first got into the business and was doing a lot of vinyl disc cutting, one producer after another just wanted to have his 45 sound louder than the next guy's, so that when the program director at the top 40 radio station was going through his stack of 45s to decide which two or three he was going to add that week, that the record would kind of jump out to the program director, orally at least.
Now, Bob, we're operating at a paradoxical disadvantage here, because by the time music comes from us here at NPR to our station, it's compressed.
Absolutely. The good news is that the compression that's on those radio station limiters is not quite as bad as you'd find on your local top 40 radio station. It's not like the FCC allows them to broadcast with a bigger signal than the NPR stations. It's just that they're more highly compressed and the ear thinks that it's louder.
Now, I want you to tell me about this recording by Guns N' Roses.
Oh, this was great. Axl Rose had this record called Chinese Democracy, and he'd had it mastered at a few other places, and everybody was doing the normal make it louder thing, and Axl really wanted it to have the final CD represent what he had mixed, which in this case is many layers of guitars. There's a lot going on this record, many, many tracks. Lo and behold, when it gets loud, it actually does get louder. And when it gets soft, it gets softer.
So your bottom line verdict from your standpoint on the decade in recorded music?
It's been really rough, folks, but it can get better, and I think it will get better. So I'm glad it's going to be over.
Bob Ludwig, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Bob Ludwig is a mastering engineer who's been working in music recording for more than 40 years. Today he runs Gateway Mastering Studios in Portland, Maine. Ludwig was talking about dynamic compression, taking the sound of music and making the quiet parts louder and the loud parts a little quieter so that you're not fiddling with the volume knob while you're driving. Well, there is another kind of compression going on today, one that allows us to carry hundreds of songs in our iPods. And there is a cost to this kind of compression as well. It seems that some sounds are obliterated in the process. Joining us to talk about what we hear and how we hear it is Dr. Andrew Oxenham. He's an associate professor in the psychology department at the University of Minnesota, and his specialty is auditory perception, how our brains and ears interact. He also started out as a recording engineer, by the way. Professor Oxenham, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And I'd like you first to just explain digital compression, the process that allows a song to go from being a very big digital sound file in its natural state to a very small file in your iPod.
That's right. That's really the challenge, is to maintain the quality of a CD, but to stuff it into a much smaller space. Let's think about how digital recording works. You start off with a very smooth sound wave, and we're trying to store that in digital form. So we're really trying to reproduce a smooth curve in terms of these square blocks, which are the digital numbers. And the difference between the smooth curve and the sharp edges that you end up with in the digital recording, you can think of as noise, because that is perceived as noise. It's perceived as an error, something that wasn't there in the original recording. The trick is to take the noise, which is the loss of fidelity, and just make it so that you can't hear it anymore.
So let's say I'm listening to Brahms on my MP3, and it's a loud part of the symphony. Are they cheating a little bit here? Are they actually pulling away lots of bits of that sound, knowing that my ears are going to hear loud orchestra, and I'll process it as loud orchestra no matter what's in there?
That's right. You can think of it that way. The loud sound is giving the coding system a lot of leeway to code things not quite as accurately as it would have to. Because the ear is being stimulated so much by the loud sound, it won't pick up very small variations produced by the coding errors.
It sounds like the audio equivalent of a mortgage-backed security. Lots of, you know, they've done a lot of tricky stuff in there in the middle, but the end result looks pretty good, sounds pretty good.
That's right. It's the sausage factory. You just don't want to know what goes into it.
Well, in the end, are we missing something when we listen to music that is digitized in this fashion, when it's compressed? Or, since we can't hear the difference, is it just as good?
There are really different levels of MP3 coding. You can go from much less data, which people can hear the difference, to higher levels of coding, which take up more space on your MP3 player, but sound better and are basically indistinguishable from the CD. And I would argue that under proper listening conditions, if it's really indistinguishable from the CD, as far as your ear is concerned, then you really haven't lost anything perceptually.
Well, Andrew Oxenham, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Andrew Oxenham is Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Minnesota, where he also works with the Auditory Perception and Cognition Lab. For more examples of compression, you can visit our website, nprmusic.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
If you know Bruce Hornsby's name at all, it's probably from his hit song, The Way It Is. In 1987, it was the most played song on American radio. But the talented pianist, singer-songwriter is far from a one-hit wonder. He's won 3 Grammy Awards, been nominated for 13, wrote the end title songs for 2 Spike Lee movies, and played on over 100 records with an A-list of performers. In 2009, Bruce Hornsby released his 10th studio album and his first for the Verve label. It's called Levitate. And this is the first cut, called Black Rats of London.
Nightcrawlers clear the forests of seedlings, nuts and leaves.
Bruce Hornsby, I want to thank you for inviting us into your home studio.
Yeah,
in Williamsburg.
Now that we all smell like dog.
Yeah, your dog Sadie
dog
just
Sadie
came in.
Came in here and just licked all of us, so you're right at home now.
Yeah. You're very close to colonial Williamsburg and Jamestown and Yorktown and all these scenes from the Revolutionary War. And the first track on your new CD, Levitate, right?
Yes,
The Black Rats of London.
Black Rats of London deals with a little some little-known facts in American history. It's swept under the rug. The true heroes have not been recognized.
Yorktown parasites decimated the Red Army of Cornwallis and his flock. Standing weakly on Yorktown battlefield with measles and smallpox. Horses, hogs, and chickens, and dogs, and John Rolfe's prized word. Bladder prevention bacterial strains from imported English dirt. Hooray, hooray, the black rats of London. They cross the sea for you and me. Let's raise a glass so thankfully. Hail, hail, hooray.
As I get older, I look to not repeat myself, and I look to find new and interesting areas to write about, and this was certainly one of them. I wrote it out of a National Geographic article about Jamestown. Cover story. 2 or 3 years ago it was written, talking about the rodents and the bacterial strains that came over on the ships and infected the locals and allowed the colonists to prevail against them. But in the end, I didn't want anybody to think that I thought this was such a great thing. So in the end, I thought I'd add this postscript that says, "Where were the black rats when we needed them the most? There were slave owners to infect." And the Joe Mengeles of the American West. That's sort of a reference to what some people would refer to as the American Holocaust.
Now, Levitate, you are writing a Broadway, a musical.
Fully 8 songs on this record come from the musical. Now, they weren't all written exactly for the musical. For instance, Black Rats of London is, quote, one of the songs in the musical. It's only in there because the play Big Shots liked the song so much, they wanted to see if they could sort of shoehorn it into the musical. And so they did, and it works great. Our play is called SCKBSTD, all in capital letters on a Virginia license plate.
Oh.
That's the play. That's the title of our play.
You're going to play one of the songs from the album, and it's a song called Paperboy.
Yes. This musical speaks to the different time that we live in, as opposed to when I grew up, doors were unlocked. It's sort of a cliche, maybe. It's sort of, you know, the good old days when this wasn't a problem. But it wasn't a problem, generally. And now it's completely different. And there's much more paranoia, and this musical speaks a bit to this paranoia. This unknown shows up and starts freaking people out. And so the rumor mill runs rampant. It's called Paperboy because it's sung by the local paperboy who's been hearing this all these vicious rumors.
Well, let's hear it. Bruce Hornsby with Paperboy from his new CD, Levitate, on the Verve label.
Is low. Here's a story you don't know. Good as anything we can't watch on HBO. Before you say it's all bunk, throw it out, it's so much junk. Listen what this guy's been hiding in his trunk. He's looking for me. He's looking for you. Cut off your feet. Best to take your shoes. A girl, a pink ribbon, auburn curls, then up his cargo and then taken for a whirl. He must have given her a whack, preteen surprise attack, ended up between the guy's spare tire and his jag. He's looking for me, he's looking for you. Different body part for every different course. In this basement there's a crypt. It's so well equipped. Seen so many ghoulish things, they now seem a nondescript. He's looking for me, he's looking for you.
That was Bruce Hornsby playing Paperboy, a tune you can find on his new album, Levitate. on the Verve label. Is this a departure for you because it's a little atonal, little
yeah.
dissonant?
I've, for many years, had a fondness for 20th century and now I guess 21st century classical music. So this is a song that deals in that language, a little more dissonant, a little more harmonically complex, but still I tried to make it a pop song in the sense that the chorus to me is fairly Beatles-esque. So I guess you could call it Lennon McCartney meet Schoenberg.
I love the song Hear My Prayer.
Simple Prayer.
Simple Prayer.
Yeah.
You're praying for a bottle of Rogaine?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, praying to win the game. It's just about the inane things that people pray for.
I've got a load of payments, head up for bank statements. I'm sick of your debt. I'm no millionaire. Finance are tottery. Liquidity is watery. Let me hear about lottery. That's my simple prayer.
So, yeah, Simple Prayer, lyrics written by my old childhood friend, Chip DiMatteo. We pulled a lot of crap in school. We had a company called Zappo Productions, and we would book the worst bands in our town. And we wrote a musical called Schenectady. We wrote a sequel called Son of Schenectady. We had this play produced as the drama club production for one of the local high schools, which was unbelievable. I don't know how we were able to finagle that that occurrence. The headmaster of the school just hated it. Anyway, in 2004... my last record, Halcyon Days, my last record of songs like Paperboy, had three songs in the middle that were basically solo piano songs. And they had, I got a letter out of the blue from Playwrights Horizons, the company on 42nd Street that develops plays. And there's a guy at Playwrights Horizons who had been turned on to these three songs on this record of mine by Brian Stokes Mitchell, the great Broadway actor-singer.
Mm-hmm.
Stokes turned this guy onto this record, and they both thought, this sounds like Broadway musical show music. He should be doing this. So they contacted me, and I responded. I said, well, I'm interested in this as long as it's fun. When it starts to be a grind and a drag, I'm done. So I contacted my old friend, Chip DiMatteo, and said, hey, let's give this a shot together. It might be fun. Let's see what we can get away with.
Bruce Hornsby speaking about his forthcoming stage musical SCKBSTD in his home studio in Williamsburg, Virginia. You can hear another song Bruce Hornsby recorded for us there at nprmusic.org. His new CD is called Levitate, and it's out now on the Verve label. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.